This episode is brought to you by Nerds Gummy Clusters, the sweet treat that always elevates the vibe. With a sweet gummy surrounded with tangy, crunchy nerds, every bite of Nerds Gummy Clusters brings you a whole new world of flavor. Whether it's game night, on the way to a concert, or kicking back with your crew, unleash your senses with Nerds Gummy Clusters.
I'm Leon Nafok, and I'm the host of Slow Burn, Watergate. Before I started working on this show, everything I knew about Watergate came from the movie All the President's Men. Do you remember how it ends? Woodward and Bernstein are sitting at their typewriters, clacking away. And then there's this rapid montage of newspaper stories about campaign aides and White House officials getting convicted of crimes, about audio tapes coming out that prove Nixon's involvement in the cover-up. The last story we see is Nixon resigns. It takes a little over a minute in the movie. In real life, it took about 2 years.
Five men were arrested early Saturday while trying to install eavesdropping equipment.
It's known as the Watergate incident.
What was it like to experience those 2 years in real time? What were people thinking and feeling as the break-in at Democratic Party headquarters went from a weird little caper to a constitutional crisis that brought down the president? The downfall of Richard Nixon was stranger, wilder, and more exciting than you can imagine. Over the course of 8 episodes, this show is going to capture what it was like to live through the greatest political scandal of the 20th century. With today's headlines once again full of corruption, collusion, and dirty tricks, it's time for another look at the gate that started it all. Subscribe to Slow Burn now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Earlier this week, the news organization Semaphore broke the story of a group chat. No, not the Pentagon one. This one has roughly 300 very powerful people in it. They're Silicon Valley executives like Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale, billionaires like Mark Cuban, and right-wing media figures like The Daily Wire's Ben Shapiro. But at the group's heart was one man, venture capitalist Marc Andreessen. I called up journalist Zoe Schiffer to ask if she was surprised to see Andreessen at the chat center.
Not at all, no.
Zoe is the director of business and industry at Wired Magazine.
Marc Andreessen is a really powerful figure in Silicon Valley. And aside from just having literal power, because he is quite wealthy, he also is kind of at the center of Silicon Valley culture. And while the way that he impacted that culture might have been a little bit on the fringe like 5 years ago, now it really has become the dominant flavor in Silicon Valley and, I would argue, kind of the entire country.
One of the group chat's organizers, Sriram Krishnan, now advises the White House on AI. He used to work with Andreessen and, according to Semaphore, called the chat the mimetic upstream of mainstream opinion. You know, the image of this group text very much feels like one where powerful people are kind of working behind the scenes to influence narrative and opinion and outcome. How do you think Marc Andreessen would feel about being described that way?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that Mark likes being a provocateur. Like, he is pretty vocal about his beliefs and I think takes pride, it looks like, in kind of setting the cultural tone. He also, like, believes what he believes very fervently. So I think there's a reason that his very, very long blog posts about, like, the future of the tech industry and where the world should be heading go viral. Like, he's a very influential figure, and that's by design. It's not an accident.
Today on the show, meet Marc Andreessen, the man whose influence stretches from Silicon Valley to the White House, and probably your house, even if you don't realize it. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. It's smart to always have a few financial goals, and here's a really smart one you can set. Earning cash back on what you buy every day. With Discover, you can. Get this, Discover automatically matches all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year. Seriously, all of it. Discover trusts you to make smart decisions. After all, you listen to this show. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions, like, are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen. And stay tuned at the end of this episode to hear the Smart Money trailer. Marc Andreessen is a Silicon Valley veteran. Not only did he co-found Andreessen Horowitz, one of the most influential venture capital firms, but he also created one of the first web browsers.
Marc Andreessen actually is like an incredibly important entrepreneur. He founded Netscape when he was in his younger days. He's like the father figure of the modern browser. And then he pivoted into venture capital and has created one of the most influential VC firms in the Valley, both in terms of like the sheer number of important companies that they have invested in and invested in early, and because the way that they involve themselves in those companies is definitely not write a check and tell them good luck. It's like they have a really specific POV on how these companies should be run, and it's founder first. You're not just investing in a company, you're investing in a founder and an idea, and you need to shepherd that person and help them grow. And they've taken lessons. Marc has taken lessons from, for example, sitting on the Facebook board or the Meta board, where he thought the way that Mark Zuckerberg was capitulating to the US government was setting up content moderation rules and regulations to try and make like liberals happy was a losing game and ultimately harmful to his business. And if you look at, you know, a more recent investment like Substack, they've taken a very, very different approach. And while we don't have the behind the scenes reporting yet, I think it's safe to say that that's probably the A16Z, the Andreessen Horowitz influence at play. The fact that they didn't set up content moderation when they were being called out for having, you know, supposed Nazis on the platform, they kind of stuck to their guns, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, do you think it's fair to say that Andreessen Horowitz, A16Z, as it's sometimes called, is it the most powerful VC firm in Silicon Valley?
I think so. I think A16Z and Founders Fund, you know, Peter Thiel's fund, like I think there's a few in this zone, but I think certainly Andreessen Horowitz is one of the most influential, in the top three for sure.
I went back and read a 10-year-old New Yorker profile of Marc Andreessen, and it's really interesting. It describes him as a media soothsayer, Andreessen the Magnificent. He also tweets 110 times a day, inundating his 310,000 followers with aphorisms and statistics and tweetstorm Jeremiads. He seems like someone who's like, who really likes ideas.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's a poster. He is someone who posted a lot on X. He also was like, this is kind of tangential, but very famous for blocking journalists, like getting blocked by Marc Andreessen. It would almost be embarrassing to not be blocked by
Marc
Andreessen.
It's like a rite of passage.
But similarly, as we saw from Ben Smith's piece in Semaphore about the group chats, you know, he's posting there all the time. He's kind of a central figure who is telling people what he thinks, and it seems like kind of going back and forth with people arguing for his point of view.
For a very long time, Marc Andreessen openly supported Democratic candidates in 2016. He backed Hillary Clinton. How would you describe his politics during, I guess, the earlier days of his prominence?
Yeah, he was definitely kind of like a classic Democratic donor. He didn't seem particularly political at that point, but he kind of went along with the usual liberal causes and he donated to Democrats. None of his views particularly stood out at that point.
Yeah, he seemed to not be super outspoken, but sort of have this, I guess, like tacit understanding, bargain or deal that he seemed to feel like he'd agreed to.
Yeah, he actually does talk about this a lot. He calls it literally the deal. And the deal is basically an unspoken agreement wherein you're an entrepreneur, like he was and is. You make a company. If the company does well, you also make a lot of money, as is exactly what happened to him. And in the process, you kind of like absolve yourself of all your sins. You're a Democrat and you support Democratic causes and you give to those causes and maybe you give to philanthropy. And because of that, you're seen as a figure to look up to in society. And in Mark's telling, the deal started to fall apart in recent years. Suddenly, if you had made a lot of money, if you were a billionaire, that was actually a sign of corruption or a signal that people should look into your past and really scrutinize you and what you did. And, you know, he kind of feels if you are a man, men are evil. Like it all started to kind of fall apart and crumble. And he felt like he and his peers were very prosecuted by the people who he had thought he was part of the same group.
That he's a victim of cancel culture, or that I guess maybe the people he surrounded himself with were in his thinking.
Totally. I think that cancel culture is actually kind of the pivotal moment. He might say it's something else, but when you hear them talk, it's so clear that the shock of being a person of their status in society, and then realizing that one article, one accusation perhaps could make society kind of cast you out in a way. And of course, there are people who are like, cancel culture is not real. They're not losing their money. Like, what are they? Whatever. But I think it's true that there's an emotional toll of being told that you are a bad person essentially online. And that culture did not give people a way to make amends. And so you had kind of liberals. There was kind of a calling out, a calling in, a looking at people's past, asking people to be better on one side. And Mark kind of felt like, oh, there's nothing I can do to like win over these people anymore. Hmm. And then you had the other side, the right, where there's basically nothing you can do to be cast out except for have liberal beliefs. Like you can do a whole host of things and you'll still be part of the group as long as you adhere to their policy beliefs. And so you saw a lot of people, Mark included, start to shift very prominently, very overtly to the right.
In April of 2020, Andreessen publishes a now pretty famous essay on the Andreessen Horowitz website titled "It's Time to Build." And it seems to be kind of this, I don't know, call to arms for his way of thinking. Can you tell me about that and I guess the role it seemed to play in Silicon Valley?
This was coming at an era where, you know, to be clear, we haven't had meaningful regulations of big tech in my lifetime or maybe ever. but there is definitely a feeling around this period that the U.S. government is becoming more antagonistic toward the tech industry, that more regulations are looming, if not in place, and also that the kind of rank and file tech worker was rising up, was asking their companies to do better, to be better. You saw during this period a lot of people calling out tech companies after they had put out statements in support of Black Lives Matter protests, saying like, well, my experience at the company is actually that it's pretty racist. And those companies were then doing these big commitments, trying to be better, whatever. Mark Andreessen, and this is my view, but I just want to be clear, like this is my assessment of what happened. It looks like he starts to feel like all of these things are stopping companies from doing what they should be doing, which is building and building fast and pushing innovation. And really, we all need to kind of get behind that ethos, that mindset. You see it now, kind of the evolution of this same thought when they talk about our relationship with China. They'll say like, look, the Chinese government, they try and help their companies. Again, like there's a lot of nuance here. If you kind of cross the Chinese government, certainly you're not going to be in a good
space. Yes, technically the Chinese government does try to help their companies.
But they also give them a lot of advantages and try and help them grow when they're, you know, for example, if you look at EVs or something, it's like they have propelled those companies in some cases ahead of Tesla. And meanwhile, you look at the United States and they're like, and you know, our government is regulating these companies, or, you know, in the case of the crypto industry, they talk a lot about debanking, like they're kind of actively trying to slow down what they would say innovation. I think the people who are regulating them are just trying to say, hey, we're trying to put guardrails in place to make sure no one gets hurt.
It's very interesting because in this essay, he says our nation and our civilization were built on production, on building. Our forefathers and foremothers built roads and trains, farms and factories, and then the computer, the microchip, the smartphone, and uncounted thousands of other things that we now take for granted. And yes, that's true, but I think any historian would also read that and say, yes, and that comes with trade-offs and thoughts about who does that building and what kind of protections they have. And, you know, there is a much more broad historical context. And what is fascinating to me is that Andreessen does not seem to see this as a question of history. He sees it as a question of will.
Yeah, that's a good distinction. I don't think these people inherently are like backward looking very much. Like, I think that they're like entrepreneurs and venture capitalists are by their nature forward looking people. And another way to put that is that they can kind of, forget or gloss over the history and kind of set a narrative that lends itself nicely to their viewpoint while maybe not being 100% historically accurate or accounting for just alternate interpretations or alternate experiences.
When we come back, Andreessen had problems with crypto policy and saw a solution in Donald Trump.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. It's smart to always have a few financial goals, and here's a really smart one you can set. Earning cash back on what you buy every day. With Discover, you can. Get this. Discover automatically matches all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year. Seriously, all of it. Discover trusts you to make smart decisions. After all, you listen to this show. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors. But did you know indoor air can be 2, 3, even 100 times more polluted than outdoor air? Breathe easy with Air Doctor, the award-winning air purifier that eliminates 99.99% of dangerous contaminants like allergens, viruses, smoke, gases, mold spores, and more. Air Doctor was voted best air purifier by Newsweek, so it's no surprise that 98% of Air Doctor customers agreed their home's air feels cleaner, safer, and healthier. Unlike other purifiers, Air Doctor captures invisible particles 100 times smaller than standard HEPA filters. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use the promo code TBD to get up to $300 off today. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee plus a 3-year warranty and $84 value free. Get this exclusive podcast-only offer now at airdoctorpro.com. That's AirDoctorPro.com and use promo code TBD.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states and situations.
Andreessen donated $2.5 million to a pro-Trump PAC in 2024. He also said he spends time at Mar-a-Lago. He did an interview with Barry Weiss in which he said Trump brings out a lot of feelings in a lot of people. And then he kind of adds that he's not Mr. Foreign Policy or Mr. Abortion Policy or guns, that he's, you know, staying in his lane. And that's really fascinating to me to know how he began to bend the president's ear and what got him that degree of closeness.
Yeah, it's It's a really interesting thing. And I think it's something that a lot of different leaders in Silicon Valley are now discovering, which is that we have a very pay-to-play administration at this point. If you buy a $5 million candlelight dinner seat at Mar-a-Lago, you may be able to have a conversation with Trump. And during that conversation, you could advocate for certain policies, and perhaps you actually see those policies come to life. You know, the reason that Marc Andreessen says he got to this point is that he met with the Biden administration about AI. And he was asking, he says, in these conversations, like, what is a potential Harris administration going to do about this? Like, what's your stance on AI companies? What's your stance on regulation? And he left those conversations worried that essentially there was going to be too much regulation, that startups wouldn't be able to flourish. You know, he was really upset with how Biden had already dealt with the crypto industry. They, again, like, talk about deep banking. They felt like there was a lack of regulation that kind of left crypto companies in no man's land.
And an SEC chair who did not look kindly on the crypto industry,
to say the least. Yes. And he would say, like, friends of his were debanked, like, they didn't have access to a traditional banking system. This left them in a really bad space. Okay. So they thought a similar thing was going to play out in AI. And if you think that AI is a national security issue, a national defense issue, like, this was a problem in his mind. It's also, like, a problem for his portfolio, which is full of a lot of AI companies and crypto companies. And so at that point, he went all in on Trump and, like Elon Musk, started spending a lot of time at Mar-a-Lago. Also, like, it's worth saying that coming out in support of Trump when these men did kind of changed the Silicon Valley culture, because while there were people who supported Trump in Silicon Valley, obviously Peter Thiel is a really prominent name there, it was still almost taboo to say it out loud because it was a minority opinion for a while. Like, the tech industry is historically pretty liberal. Suddenly you started to see this kind of, like, counterculture movement where it was okay to say you supported Trump. We saw, you know, during Trump's inauguration, like, the row right behind him was all of these tech CEOs, which was a really stark change from Trump's first term.
In contrast to an Elon Musk, though, Andreessen seems to operate more quietly. He's not holding a chainsaw. He's not, you know, on the stage in front of a big crowd. Is that just his style, or is that strategic?
I mean, I think they are just very different people and men. It's kind of part of Elon's brand to be that brash and chaotic in public. I mean, a lot of people close to Elon will say, like, look, when you sit down with him one-on-one, he's not the character you see on TV. Like, he's much, much more reasonable. He likes to play the part. He likes to get people riled up. Marc Andreessen does too, but he's a little more behind the scenes, and he's having lots of conversations. Like, it's not to say he's, like, quiet or not talking publicly, because he absolutely is.
No, he goes on tons of podcasts. He talks a lot.
It's that. It's kind of like those in-depth one-on-one conversations with other people who largely seem to, like, kind of agree with his viewpoint or hold similar beliefs. And so he's not out there in the way that Elon is, like, inviting controversy from the other side necessarily all the time. Although it still comes.
Yeah, last year A16Z opened an office in D.C. What does that tell you about their intentions?
It's so interesting. And we're talking during the, I think it's called the Hill and Valley Forum, which is this kind of, like, conference that happens every year where Silicon Valley and Capitol Hill, like, come together and talk. And it really did used to feel that way, that these two powerful nodes in the country were coming together for a weekend to have an important conversation. Now, when you look at the list, like, they're all one team now. It's not two sides coming together. It's like the people who were prominent in Silicon Valley now have really high ranking positions in the U.S. government, or they're high level government contractors. Like, it's honestly kind of fascinating that the forum is still taking place. So I kind of see the Andreessen Horowitz office as, like, a big symbolic move in that direction, where it used to feel like we're going to build over here in sunny California and we'll let kind of the U.S. government do its thing. Now they're like, no, actually being able to build, we have to have a critical role in the U.S. government. We have to decide how these regulations are going to be shaped, and we can. And so we will. I mean, also, Mark Zuckerberg just bought an enormous house in Washington, D.C.
Do you think Mark Andreessen understand something about politics or the way politics and the media come together that maybe some other people in Silicon Valley don't?
Yeah, I kind of think of the line that Steve Bannon says, which is politics is downstream of culture. I feel like Marc Andreessen understands that very, very well. And so he's very intent on impacting the culture and thereby politics.
What would the future look like if his vision came true?
I think you'd see a country where it was really, I mean, it's like not that different from what we're seeing now, because a lot of regulations are being stripped away. But I think what he wants, my view, is like the U.S. government to be actively supporting its companies, to be pushing them to get bigger and more successful, to be rewarding the people that are behind these companies so that the U.S. can be dominant in the fields that he cares about, AI, crypto, all of that.
You know, we've talked a lot about his successes. What has gotten in his way before?
You know, he's gotten a lot of criticism. I think that's probably like a constant part of his life. But in terms of like actual major failures, like we're talking about someone who is arguably at the apex of his wealth and power. And so it's hard for me to look at that and say like, oh yeah, that's been like a real hardship. I'm sure they exist. But right now, Marc Andreessen, Elon Musk, like these people feel almost untouchable, at least in the current framework, the current U.S. politics that we're seeing.
Zoe Schiffer, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Zoe Schiffer is the director of business and industry for Wired. We reached out to Andreessen Horowitz for comment, but did not hear back by our deadline. And that is it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Patrick Fort and Shana Roth. Our show is edited by Evan Campbell. Slate is run by Hilary Fry, and TBD is part of the larger What Next family. And if you're looking for even more Slate podcasts to listen to, check out this past Wednesday's episode of What Next. Representative Ayanna Pressley talks with Mary Harris about what she saw during a visit to an ICE detention center in Louisiana. And we'll be back on Sunday with another episode. Washington Post reporter Fez Siddiqui talking about his new book on Elon Musk, Hubris Maximus. All right, I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks so much for listening.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast.
Money can be confusing. Should you invest in ETFs, get a travel rewards credit card, buy a house, or just build a really fancy pillow fort?
That could work. No shame in pillow fort game. Or you could just tune in for clear, research-backed financial insights.
I'm Sean Piles, a certified financial planner professional.
And I'm Elizabeth Ayola. We're the hosts of NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, where you bring the money questions and we bring trustworthy information backed by NerdWallet's expert analysis, without the jargon or the sales pitch.
Our nerds do the research so you don't have to. We'll help you understand your options so you can make the best decision for your situation, from optimizing your investments and maximizing credit card rewards to making big money moves with confidence.
Plus, we keep it real. No lectures, no judgment. Just tips and tools you can use to build wealth and take control of your finances. Think of us as your financial GPS, helping you navigate your money decisions and avoid expensive wrong turns.
Whether you're planning for retirement, weighing a big purchase, or just want to make your money work harder for you, we've got insights that you can use in real life.
So if you want practical, straightforward, and actually useful financial knowledge, plus a little bit of fun along the way, follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Trust us. Future you will thank you.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast.
Money can be confusing. Should you invest in ETFs, get a travel rewards credit card, buy a house, or just build a really fancy pillow fort?
That could work. No shame in pillow fort game. Or you could just tune in for clear, research-backed financial insights.
I'm Sean Piles, a certified financial planner professional.
And I'm Elizabeth Ayola. We're the hosts of NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, where you bring the money questions and we bring trustworthy information backed by NerdWallet's expert analysis, without the jargon or the sales pitch.
Our nerds do the research so you don't have to. We'll help you understand your options so you can make the best decision for your situation, from optimizing your investments and maximizing credit card rewards to making big money moves with confidence.
Plus, we keep it real. No lectures, no judgment. Just tips and tools you can use to build wealth and take control of your finances. Think of us as your financial GPS, helping you navigate your money decisions and avoid expensive wrong turns.
Whether you're planning for retirement, weighing a big purchase, or just want to make your money work harder for you, we've got insights that you can use in real life.
So if you want practical, straightforward, and actually useful financial knowledge, plus a little bit of fun along the way, follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Trust us. Future you will thank you.